Do you want more true crime bedtime stories? Sign up to Bonus Bedtime Stories on Apple Podcasts today to access early and ad-free episodes. Subscribers will also get an exclusive bonus episode each month. But for now, get comfortable and enjoy tonight's episode.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to True Crime Bedtime Stories. Today we delve into the chilling crimes of a man who cast a dark shadow across the UK for over 6 decades. We're tracing the sinister path of Peter Tobin, a name that evokes fear and intrigue in the annals of criminal history. Get ready to dive deep into a tale of brutality, cunning, and the relentless search for truth as a serial killer is exposed. The shocking revelation came with the discovery of a body hidden beneath the floorboards of St. Patrick's Church in Glasgow, Scotland, in September 2006. The victim, a young woman who had been working as a cleaner, had vanished, seemingly without a trace. It was the kind of disappearance that gnawed at the community's sense of safety, but no one was prepared for what would follow. This was not a simple case of a missing person. It was the grim unveiling of a serial killer who had managed to evade capture for decades. Peter Tobin, under the guise of a frail church handyman known as Pat McLaughlin, had been blending into the fabric of the parish seamlessly. His act was convincing, even endearing to some. He described Angelica Klook, his supposed wee apprentice, with an air of a kindly mentor, concealing a darkness that lay beneath. The truth began to surface when Tobin, questioned by the police and then suddenly disappeared, sparked a renewed fever in the investigation. Here was a man who had left barely a ripple in his departure, except for the deep unease that took hold amongst those who realized something was amiss. Amid this desperation, a pivotal call came in. A woman, her voice laced with urgency and fear, told the authorities that McLaughlin wasn't who he appeared to be. Behind the benign facade was Peter Tobin, a man with a past darkened by heinous acts and a history with law enforcement. This revelation set off a series of events involving meticulous searches, leading investigators to a hatch within the church, small enough to go unnoticed, large enough to hold a shocking secret. Angelica's body was found in the void beneath, her final resting place made a horrid crypt in a place of worship. The post-mortem delivered a tale of violence that was almost impossible to comprehend. Bound, gagged, raped, beaten, and stabbed 16 times. The ferocity of the attack spoke volumes to those investigating the crime. This was not the act of a first-time offender. While Tobin had almost succeeded in covering his tracks, his plan began to unravel with the help of science. Forensic analysis at the crime scene produced a match on the UK's National Criminal Intelligence Database. Ironically, Tobin's past indiscretions would lead to his downfall. His DNA was a damning piece of the puzzle, connecting him incontrovertibly to the crimes he had committed. But there was a cold efficiency to the scenario laid out before the authorities. The haphazard grave wasn't meant to be a final one. Tobin had likely intended to move Angelica's body. It was this particular hunch, this chilling thought, that suggested Tobin's actions were calculated and not at the spur of the moment. As if compelled by a twisted fate, Tobin's path led him to London next, where he took another alias and awaited his next move. But the net was closing in. A nurse's memory and a perfunctory nod in recognition in a London hospital sealed his immediate fate. "You've been looking for me," he confessed without prompt upon being questioned by PC Alan Murray. Tobin's arrest wasn't just for Angelica's murder, it was the beginning of a larger quest for truth. Charged with breaching the sex offenders register's terms, it gave investigators precious time to build a case not only for Angelica's death, but also for the decades of Tobin's deceit that were about to unravel under the weight of Operation Anagram, a meticulous inquiry that aimed to dissect and understand the complex tapestry of Tobin's movements across the span of six decades. With every examined detail from his jobs, cars, relationships, and alarming number of aliases and addresses, a clearer, sinister picture was forming, one that told not only of Tobin's dark past, but hinted at the darkness of other potential unsolved cases that bore his signature. The tragic tale of Angelica Cluck begins in the quiet halls of St. Patrick's Church in Anderston, Glasgow. It was here, in September of 2006, that Angelica, a Gdansk University undergraduate during the day and a cleaner by evening, was reported missing by her boyfriend. At the time, she was funding her language studies by spending her summer in Scotland, but her bright future was cut short in the most horrific way imaginable. The initial phase of the investigation saw suspicion fall on three individuals, one of whom was a church handyman, slight in stature, known to others as Pat McLaughlin. Angelica had been assisting him with painting a shed on the day she vanished, her innocence unknowingly placing her in the path of a predator. Pat McLaughlin, with graying hair and an avuncular demeanor, had charmingly referred to her as his wee apprentice, masking a sinister reality beneath a facade of geniality. Soon after being interviewed by the authorities, McLaughlin disappeared, as if swallowed up by the earth, and with him, it seemed, the answers to Angelica's whereabouts. But as days passed and the search intensified, a turning point in the investigation arrived. McLaughlin's image was plastered across media outlets, and it wasn't long before a phone call from an astute observer put detectives on the trail of something far more ominous. Pat McLaughlin was not his real identity. This unassuming church handyman was in fact Peter Tobin, a convicted sex offender who had managed to evade the radar for almost a year. Digging deeper into the church premises where Angelica was last seen, a flooring expert made a chilling discovery, a bizarre imperfection in the floor. Hidden beneath was a hatch, just 28 inches by 18 inches in size, but it opened up to a much deeper horror. Within the concealed vault lay the body of Angelica Cluck, her life extinguished by a brutal cocktail of violence and depravity. The post-mortem examination painted a gruesome picture. Angelica had been bound, gagged, and subjected to monstrous acts before her life was taken by 16 stab wounds delivered with frenetic fury, a clear indication that her attacker was no novice to such wrongdoing. Detective Swindle, the leading force of the investigation, had the grisly task of viewing Angelica's injuries. He was struck by a stark realization. The person responsible for this barbarity must have a history of violence, and this likely wasn't his first kill. Swindle's instincts also hinted that Tobin may have had plans to move Angelica's body, making the discovery all the more critical. Tobin's past crimes were equally telling. His DNA had already etched a criminal story, landing him on the UK National Criminal Intelligence Database following a conviction for the rape of two 14-year-old girls in the 90s. And after his release from a decade behind bars, Tobin had continued his pattern, assaulting a neighbor in Paisley before evading capture once more. When Angelica was murdered, Tobin fled to London, where he cloaked his identity in another alias in the hope of dodging the clutches of the law. Yet the net was closing in on him. PC Alan Murray found Tobin feigning illness in a London hospital, recognized only by a nurse who had seen his picture. Confronted by the officer, Tobin surrendered his subterfuge, simply stating, "Peter Tobin, you have been looking for me." Although initially nabbed for breaching the sex offenders register, this respite granted detectives the time necessary to build an airtight forensic case. DNA from Tobin was not just found on Angelica's body, but also tainted the scene of her murder, his watch, his t-shirt at the hospital. These would become the nails in the coffin of Tobin's facade, sealing his fate beyond any doubt. The trial was an illustration of methodical judicial procedure, but it was obvious the jury saw through Tobin's masquerade. In less than 4 hours of deliberation, they returned a verdict: guilty. The gavel fell with a resounding finality that echoed through the chambers of the High Court in Edinburgh. Operation Anagram was a covert initiative, as shrouded in secrecy as the killer it sought to unmask. The day Peter Tobin was arrested marked the beginning of an unprecedented police operation that would span across the nation, uncovering the intricate and heinous tapestry of Tobin's past. The purpose was clear: to determine if there were more victims, to put together the puzzle pieces of Tobin's life, and to find a pattern in his crimes. Led by Detective Superintendent David Swindle, Operation Anagram intended to chronicle Tobin's nomadic existence from the moment he drew his first breath in Johnston, Renfrewshire, until the chilling revelation of his true nature through Angelica Cluck's murder. It's not every day that you discover that the murderer in your midst might be a serial killer with a half-century-long trail of violence. Swindle's approach was methodical. The team dove into the depths of not just Tobin's crimes, but his life as well, analyzing his jobs, vehicles, friendships, and romantic relationships. It was a monumental task, compounded by Tobin's propensity for deception. He utilized around 40 aliases, switched addresses 60 times, and juggled 38 different mobile phone SIM cards. The timeline of Tobin's life began to take form slowly, yet steadily, painting a grim picture of a man whose life was marked by consistent criminality and violence. Born to a family with 7 siblings, Tobin's life unfolded as a cacophony of abuse and delinquency. His father, an engineer named Daniel, and his mother Marjorie watched as their son devolved into a petty criminal specializing in theft and forgery. Tobin was sentenced to time in youth detention centers more than once as a child, and by his teenage years, his proclivity for crime was well entrenched. 3 failed marriages, each concluding in domestic violence, further etched his violent tendencies into the public record. Tobin's third wife, Kathy Wilson, recounted the transformation from charming and funny to a man wrought with violence. After their son Daniel's birth and a subsequent move to West Lothian, the marriage disintegrated. All the while, Tobin traversed the country, fitting insulation panels, his profession serving as a veil for his sinister activities. The Anagram team faced not just the challenge of mapping Tobin's history, but comparing his whereabouts with a slew of unsolved murders. It was a path fraught with coincidence and uncomfortable parallels. The timeline they assembled was a chilling chronicle of predatory behavior lurking behind each of Tobin's calculated moves. While painstaking, the efforts of Operation Anagram began to bear fruit. As the team pieced together where Tobin had been throughout the years, they stumbled upon more than just the history of a serial killer. They unearthed potential connections to long-cold cases that had baffled the authorities for years. Operation Anagram represented a triumph of criminal investigation. It was through their exhaustive detective work that they could contribute to the reinvigoration of cold cases, bringing hope to families mired in uncertainty. And though Tobin's life was now an open book, the operation suggested a haunting possibility. There were chapters still hidden, victims unaccounted for, and lives cruelly taken and buried under layers of deceit. This operation laid the groundwork for bringing those stories to light and ensuring that Peter Tobin would face the full extent of justice for his crimes. The disappearance of Vicki Hamilton cast a shadow over the community that never faded. Not until, years later, the shadow pointed directly to one man, Peter Tobin. Vicki, a 15-year-old schoolgirl, was last seen alive on a cold February day in 1991 after she hugged her sister goodbye at a bus stop in Livingston, West Lothian. It was supposed to be a regular journey back to her home in Reading Falkirk after a visit with her sister that turned into a heart-wrenching mystery, one that left her family and friends in limbo for over a decade. Vicki's case perplexed Scotland and grew cold as the years tickled by without a trace until Operation Anagram breathed new life into it. The operation team, led by Detective Superintendent David Swindle, was not originally searching for Vicki, but rather piecing together the jigsaw of Tobin's life. However, the operation's tendrils reached everywhere Tobin had been, and it was the uncanny overlap between his chronology and Vicky's disappearance that led to the first whispers of a connection. At the time of Vicky's vanishing, Tobin had been living just a short walk from where she was last seen. He was unemployed, alone, and, as we would discover much later, harboring dark tendencies. Her personal effects seemed at first to have vanished into thin air, but strangely, 11 days after she was reported missing, Vicky's purse was found abandoned in a place she should never have been, Edinburgh's St. Andrew's Square. That discovery cast a dark cloud of suspicion over the hopes that Vicky might have simply run away. The Anagram team's meticulous examination of Tobin's past residence in Bathgate generated a new lead in Vicky's case. A search of the property brought to light a knife concealed within the loft space that bore traces of Vicky's DNA. Yet, for all the assurance they were on the right trail, her whereabouts remained a mystery, seemingly without answer. Then on 12th of November 2007, in the garden of the very house that Tobin once occupied, hundreds of miles away in Margate, Kent, a body was discovered. And with tragic finality, the remains were identified as Vicky's. Her disappearance had morphed into a case of murder. As horrifying as the discovery was, it was the details that haunted us. The care with which her body had been hidden, the rings of her late mother still on her fingers, and the inescapable presence of Tobin's DNA on a bag that wrapped part of her remains. Even Tobin's young son, Daniel, was unwittingly woven into the narrative with his DNA found on Vicky's purse. The somber reality that Tobin had indeed taken Vicky's life was undeniable in the face of the evidence trail leading straight to his door. This revelation was not merely an end point, but rather a horrific indicator of Tobin's potential involvement in other unsolved cases, a notion that the Anagram team would continue to explore with grim determination. A year after Vicky's remains were found, in December 2008, Tobin stood trial for her murder. It was a trial rife with grim details and harrowing evidence, painting a portrait of a monster masquerading as a man. The verdict was pronounced in under 30 minutes, confirming our fears and suspicions. Tobin was a serial killer, and with his conviction, her family, though grappling with immense loss, could finally begin to seek solace in the knowledge that justice was served, and Vicky's vibrant life was honored by the truth's unveiling. Detectives hadn't been searching for Vicki Hamilton in the garden of that house in Margate. They stumbled upon her remains while looking for another young woman, Dinah McNichol, an 18-year-old student whose disappearance in 1991 baffled and saddened the nation. Dinah McNichol was last seen on the 6th of August, 1991, a detail that haunts the memories of her loved ones. She had been at the Torpedo Town Music Festival in Liphook, Hampshire. After the festival, Dinah and a friend, David Tremlett, decided to hitchhike back home, a decision that, unbeknownst to them, would lead to a dark and devastating turn. David Tremlett was safely dropped off near Junction 8 of the M25. The driver, a man with a Scottish accent, was the last person known to have seen Dinah after David's departure. Tremlett's safe return provides a chilling contrast to the fate that befell Dinah. As it transpired, during the period of Dinah's disappearance, Peter Tobin resided in Margate, Kent, having moved into his house on March 25, 1991, merely weeks away from the day Dinah vanished. Tobin's proximity to Dinah's last known location was more than suspicious. It was an eerie coincidence that intimated a sinister link. It was a former neighbor of Tobin's, David Martin, who unknowingly provided a vital clue. David recollected seeing Tobin digging what he described as a massive hole in his garden. This unsightly pit in the ground, a sand pit for Tobin's son, he had claimed, was filled in eerily quickly, prompting suspicion in hindsight. Fast forward to the 12th of November 2007, a day of profound heartbreak and grave discovery. Using radar to scan the yard, police uncovered something that no one hoped to find, but that the evidence had hinted at: a body buried in the garden of the house that once housed Peter Tobin. Initially, detectives thought they'd discovered Dinah, but in a harrowing twist, they instead identified Vicki Hamilton, an entirely different missing person, who was last seen years earlier and hundreds of miles away. The implications were dire and far-reaching. Had Tobin transported Vicky's remains across the border to bury them in the same garden where Dinah's fate would be sealed? Tobin's web of lies began to unravel further when forensic investigation linked Tobin's DNA to a bag found covering Vicky's upper torso. Evidently, Tobin's crimes knew no bounds, crossing geographical and moral lines with utter impunity. And as if this connection wasn't harrowing enough, the young son of Tobin was implicated by proxy. His DNA was found on Vicky's purse, left in Edinburgh, as if it had once served as a plaything for the child. Tobin's garden yielded yet another secret. It was there, in the same Margate garden, that investigators would finally uncover the remains of Dinah McNichol. Bound and gagged, her life had been cruelly stolen, her vibrant future extinguished. The discovery further cemented Tobin's modus operandi: murder, burial, and quiet residence over terrible secrets. Pieces of a tragic puzzle fell into place at Tobin's trial for Dinah's murder. The court heard how Dinah, much like Vicki Hamilton, had been subdued with a cocktail of drugs, her final moments no doubt colored by fear and confusion. And in what can only be interpreted as callous and cold-blooded avarice, Tobin plucked more than $2,000 from Dinah's building society account. Imagine the courtroom's atmosphere when the jury returned with a guilty verdict in less than 15 minutes. A remarkable acknowledgement of the overwhelming evidence against Tobin, an affirmation of justice yet so little consolation to the families shattered by his evil deeds. Or are there more stories waiting patiently to be told? Tobin, diagnosed by the court system as irredeemably dangerous, was handed sentences that assured he would never walk free again. Judge Mr. Justice Calvert Smith's words were as unequivocal as they were final: Peter Tobin should never be released from prison. The courtroom, though it often feels like a conclusion, was not the end of Tobin's story. Questions lingered, and the silent whisper of additional unnamed victims crept through the legal victories. The truth is, we may never know the full extent of Peter Tobin's dark legacy. Tobin's name has been whispered in the same breath as some of Scotland's most chilling and unresolved cases. Among them are the Bible John killings, horrific crimes that cast a shadow of terror across Glasgow in the late 60s, which we'll explore in an upcoming episode. While police have stopped short of declaring Tobin the culprit of these crimes, it's the absence of conclusive disproof that fuels the whispers and wonderings. After all, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. And what of the unclaimed jewelry found in Tobin's possession? Pieces that neither his ex-wives nor anyone else has laid claim to. Could these trinkets be sinister souvenirs? Trophies of his heinous acts, kept to savor the twisted memories of prey unknown? Despite intense efforts and expansive searches in areas linked to Tobin's past, a cryptic canvas of addresses and false identities, no new victims have been unearthed. Brighton and Portslade have been scoured, yet the secrets they hold have not been revealed. It begs the question, are there more yet to be discovered, or has justice cast its net as far as it will go? Detective Swindle's unrelenting conviction that more victims exist cannot be easily dismissed. The tragic implication of potential unreported missing persons echoes a dire call. Such instances paint a somber portrait of individuals untethered, whose disappearances go unnoticed amidst life's chaotic tapestry. In Tobin's case, this becomes a stark reminder. The lack of evidence, no matter how frustrating, does not close the door on the validity of these grim possibilities. As Detective Swindle aptly frames it, it's the missing that may unlock the final chapters of Tobin's dark saga. Tobin has remained silent, offering no confessions, no clues. And with his death in prison in October 2022, a myriad of answers may have died alongside him, locking away forever the truth of his full legacy of terror. So we're left to ponder, to speculate, the magnitude of evil one man can carry within him. When faced with the abyss of Peter Tobin's crimes, one can't help but hope that the full scope of his atrocities has been revealed. Yet, one must also brace for the possibility that shadows of his deeds might still cling to the edges of unsolved mysteries, their stories waiting to be told. For more about this and all of our episodes, check out our True Crime Bedtime Stories Instagram and TikTok accounts. Join us next time for True Crime Bedtime Stories. Until then, sleep tight.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.